Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. I am your host, Martha Reddick, and this week I am very excited because I have on a friend of mine from college. His name is Andy Rogers, and he is here to educate us all about juvenile or type 1 diabetes. Hello, Andy.
Martha, I am so excited. I can't stand it. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. Andy and I were chatting before we started recording and realized that it had been far too long since we had spoken.
Oh, so too long.
Yeah. So before we get into like the meat of this, which is type 1 juvenile diabetes. Let's hear a little bit about your background with this and with kids, you know, a little bit of both.
Yeah, sure. So I have had type 1 diabetes since the age of 15. So I've had it for almost 13 or 14 years now. But that's actually not the first experience or exposure I've had to type 1 diabetes. My sister, who's my older sister, was diagnosed at the age of 9. So I've kind of lived with this disease from a family that didn't have to deal with diabetes at all or really needed to know what it was, to a brother to a type 1 who had to learn how to live with it peripherally, to her experiences where I got to see a lot of the biological aspects of the disease state but didn't really feel or connect with the emotional side, the empathetic side, because it's hard to describe how you go through living with a chronic illness, especially at such a young and vulnerable age. And then I was diagnosed 7 years after her diagnosis, and it's just totally kind of flipped my world upside down. And it's really led a lot of my professional work. I've worked with Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation as a school coordinator. I've worked with Novo Nordisk. It's a big insulin production company, or pharmaceutical. I've worked with them as a diabetes care specialist. And now I'm in grad school in physician's assistant studies. And I will most likely work with an endocrinologist to treat type 1. So it's really, and I wrote a musical.
Yes,
I just sometimes forget about that. Yes. So Martha and I are both theater nerds and musical theater nerds. And I studied biochemistry and theater at the University of Tennessee. And I decided to do a joint research project where I kind of combined both of my loves, both of my passions, and I decided to focus on type 1 diabetes because I knew it well. And I wrote a musical called Andy and the Beats. And it tells the story of this 13-year-old boy who gets diagnosed with diabetes and what happens afterwards. Because a lot of the times, education and even art that's out there about diabetes sometimes deals with what happens prior to the diagnosis, the symptoms you'll see, signs and symptoms. But not really what happens afterwards. It's a lifelong chronic illness that is not curable. So from the day you're diagnosed as a 9-year-old, or in my case, a 15-year-old, the rest of your life is completely changed. And it's a daily battle. So I wanted to really get that aspect into the musical, as well as a lot of the medical verbiage just to make it more commonplace for anybody who sees it or for any actor. I mean, you might, I don't know what kind of time we have, but for you as an actress to come in not knowing about diabetes and then having to expose yourself to all that medical knowledge and
luckily, I don't know. There's a lot of things. Say many of the medical terms.
Martha played my mom. I played Andy, the 13-year-old version of myself, and Martha wonderfully. Not as much as you knocked it out of the ballpark. You just captured the essence of Jenny Rogers. Let's just be honest.
I love your mom.
She's a good one.
She's a fantastic one. I will never forget her bringing Tina and I over to the piano. Tina and me, excuse me. I was an English major. Don't worry about it.
No worries.
Bringing Tina and me over to the piano and just working with us on some of those songs because I'm not super musically inclined. So I really appreciate
that. I beg to differ.
But anyway, yeah. And so I was first exposed to a lot of information and doing, you know, some of my own research because as an actress, that's how I get into a role about type 1 diabetes because I was in this show, which really quick little story. I was working backstage for The Man of La Mancha, which Andy was in.
And oh my God, Andy, that show.
Came up to me and was like, Martha, I'm writing a musical about diabetes. Would you want to be in it? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll be in it. But thinking in my brain, like, he's not actually going to write a musical about diabetes. And then 6 months later, he emailed me a script and was like, hey, read this. Tell me what you think. Tell me if you still want to be in it. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's actually doing it. Because a lot of times in the theater world, people have ideas and not as much follow through as you do, Andy. And I really
that's
love.
Such a nice compliment. Thank you. I love that story. No, I remember trying to pitch this when I initially had the idea. I wanted it to be more accessible, less like Schoolhouse Rock, which Schoolhouse Rock is awesome, but less like, hey, let me teach you the ABCs, and more emotionally, I guess has a more emotional depth. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Yeah. I wanted it to be more of a show that was accessible to anybody, not just, I have this disease, I need to see this show.
Right. Yes. And I think you really did that.
But you all made it. I still work on it all the time. I just sent you the updated script. I work on it all the time, but it really evolves whenever I have my friends. My friends are really the ones that have been involved in it. The first, you know, you all as the first cast, it helped me bring it to life. I didn't see a lot of what has now gone into the show prior to doing it. And that's like the beauty of theater because it can just change so much.
So, listeners, if you would like to see pictures from the show throughout this week, then check out Chronicles of Nania's Instagram and or Facebook and or Twitter, which if you type in Chronicles of Nania, you'll get there every time. I will be adding pictures throughout the week because we have some really good ones from that show. So, yes, that's just a little plug for checking out our social media.
Yes, do it.
But let's talk about type 1 diabetes. Let's start with kind of the science behind it, which you are so wonderful at explaining.
Oh my God. It's fascinating. Yeah. So first up, my first lesson, whenever I teach anybody about diabetes, I always say there is no U in diabetes because if you spell it out, D-I-A-B-E-T-E-S, there's no U. So it is not pronounced diabetes. I know you're going to see Walter Brimley on that commercial and talk about his diabetes testing supply, and that's false. It's not diabetes. It's diabetes. That is one of my biggest pet peeves with this disease state.
That's so funny.
Good lesson, right?
Very good lesson. And an important one.
I might be in diabetes, but you are not, you know? So... So that's just really important. If you learn nothing else, at least learn that. You'll be five steps ahead. But so my other big pet peeve is putting type 1 diabetes in the big diabetes melting pot because 95% of the diabetic population has type 2 diabetes, which is completely different than type 1 diabetes. So type 1 diabetes, it's great that you're having it on this podcast because it is more prevalent in juveniles. It used to be called juvenile diabetes, but they've recently changed it because the onset of diagnosis has fluctuated so much, but because the real marker of diabetes or type 1 diabetes is the destruction of beta cells. So
Okay.
there's this organ called your pancreas, and it kind of sits kind of behind your stomach. And so it looks like a little fish. They call it the fish organ, or at least I call it the fish organ. It looks like a little fish, like a little cloudy, bumpy fish behind your stomach. And it has a cell called beta cells that make insulin. And I'm sure most of you listeners have heard of the word insulin because that is the treatment for type 1 diabetes. So
Right.
what happens, it's this autoimmune attack. So most kids that end up having type 1 diabetes will have this predisposition for autoimmune attack. And it goes very into depth with the science with certain MHC receptors and HLA like prototypes and stuff that we don't have to talk about. But basically, you have this predisposition for autoimmune attack, and then something happens, an environmental trigger happens, and your beta cells are destroyed. So there's so through an autoimmune attack, these kids no longer have beta cells, so they no longer produce insulin. And insulin is like this key that unlocks this door into your different organs to take glucose out of your blood. And glucose comes from food. So if you're following me, I'm going to do a wrap up, I promise, because this sounds kind of in depth. But so whenever we eat it, the carbohydrates that we eat from the foods break down into glucose, and then that gives us energy to do things, to move, to run, to think, to make our hearts pump, to make our muscles move, and insulin allows it to go into the different places instead of just staying in the blood. If there's no insulin, it just stays in the blood and accumulates, and it starts getting into complications of untreated or undiagnosed diabetes, which is not part of the pathophys. But that's what happens in these kids. So really, we don't know the exact cause, which is why there's not a cure or a way to prevent the disease. So kids will come and you'll see kids, some of the early onset symptoms will be just an extreme thirst. They call it polydipsia. You can't, it's like an unquenchable thirst. I remember for my diagnosis, or right before my diagnosis, I would drink 3 to 4 cans of Sprite before even touching my food. I was that thirsty. And at that time, I was drinking a lot of soda, which doesn't sound that great, but it was like this unquenchable thirst. And you'll have urination on top of that. It's called polyuria. And you'll have frequent urination. You'll be drowsy, just this extreme fatigue. You'll see weight loss, which is actually sometimes a little hard to find with kids at a young age because they're growing so much, you don't really realize that they're losing weight at the same time. But you'll be having this increased appetite with weight loss, which kind of is this telltale sign that something's up. You'll have vision changes. Sometimes your eyes will hurt. A fruity odor in the breath. It's a sign of something called diabetic ketoacidosis. And those are mainly the ones that you'll see most often.
Okay, so all of this is really good information, I think, for nannies to just be on the lookout for
Yes.
if a kid is like constantly thirsty. Now, if they've been running around in the park and like also don't WebMD it, you know, like.
I don't want you to worry if they're, drinking a lot. If they're drinking a lot of water, running around, that's not technically a sign of type 1 diabetes. It is a little hard to tell. I remember my sister, she went probably a year of having subtle, gradual, this like almost insidious type of symptoms before she was diagnosed and before we knew anything. Right. And mine at 15 was within a week, and I even knew it. I went and told my dad. I was like, I have diabetes. He's like, really? I was like, yeah. Let's check my blood sugar. It was over 600. I was like, okay, so we have diabetes. It's a little harder to tell when they're in that prime age of diagnosis, which is around like 7 to 9.
Youngest? Do you know what the youngest anyone has ever?
I don't know the youngest, the actual, like, if it were like a record, but I know it could be right after birth. Oh, okay. You can be born with diabetes. You can be 6 months old and have diabetes, okay, or type 1 diabetes for sure.
Yeah, just curious.
I think 6 months old. I'll need to look that one up, but it can be as young as that. And if so, that's something they do, screenings right after you're born. They do like a heel stick and they check your sugar. They check for like random rare disorders like PKU. So they'll know it at the hospital.
Right.
But knowing that like thirst, urination, if they're tired, if they're losing weight,
like
just keeping
hungry,
it
hungry.
And so diabetes mellitus is actually named, and this is an ancient disease. This has been around for a long time. It's actually named, the meaning is sieve. So it's like these kids would keep eating and eating and eating, putting it into the sieve and just not gaining anything and draining it out and urinating everything out. And mellitus, it's diabetes mellitus is like the full name of the disease. And that means honey. So it's like sweet pea, technically. Oh. And that was how they would diagnose it back in the day. They would taste the actual urine and it'd be sweet.
Wow.
And it would be a terrible job. Just a terrible job.
I mean, I think being a doctor,
so don't do that,
back in
nannies,
the day at all.
Don't do it.
Anything.
I know,
medical,
right?
Medical back, like, in the day, because you're just like, I don't know how to help you.
We have so much now. To even diagnose diabetes or type 1 diabetes, it's a simple finger glucose stick.
Right.
You can do it at home. So, I mean, that's not something that I would recommend going out and purchasing, nannies, or I would not recommend tasting their urine. Just
FYI.
Don't
do either of those things.
Don't do either of those
things.
Tell the parents. They will notice it. They will notice it too. These are actually really good signs of, if they're falling asleep in class, maybe they come home, you get a call from the teacher, they've been falling asleep for without a reason. I know when my blood sugar is high, I'm usually napping in the afternoon. I just fall asleep without any reason. So always good to look out, and always good for kids to continue seeing their pediatrician.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is like the science behind it. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. I love this. I'm a nerd. I love the science.
I was in the show. I heard Dr. Arfe explain it a million times. I still needed that refresher course. So I appreciate
it's
good. That.
It's always good to have a refresher.
So now let's talk about once a child is diagnosed. So either if you are nannying for a child who is diagnosed and you're making that transition, or if you come into a household where a child has type 1 diabetes, what is the practical day in, day out day of a child with type 1 look like?
Yes. Okay. So there's going to be a couple things you need to be on the lookout for. And one is their glucose monitor. Like we talked about, actually you can diagnose it or diagnose type 1 diabetes from a glucose monitor. All kids, all type 1 patients with type 1 diabetes, just a random side note, they've changed actually what we call it. We don't say type 1 diabetics anymore. We say patients or kids with type 1 diabetes.
Oh,
it's just like you wouldn't say that with other people first. Just FYI, you can call me a type 1 diabetic. I will not get offended. But that is the politically correct way to say it. You wouldn't say that with other disease states. And so if you compared it to other disease states, it would be odd to call them by that. So you don't have to say, oh, I have a type 1 diabetic. I have a patient or a child with type 1 diabetes.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Just FYI. Yeah, no
worries.
Language
is super important, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, cool. So at the house, you'll have the glucose monitor. So they're checking their blood sugar. The goal of the day goal is to maintain, it's glucose homeostasis, but to maintain normal glucose or blood sugar readings. So the typical readings you want are between 80 to 120. So that's read right from the monitor. And normally kids will be checking 4 to 6 times a day. So they'll be checking at meals. So remember with our like science behind type 1 diabetes, everything's kind of food related and sugar from the food related to how your body uses insulin. So what patients or kids with type 1 diabetes do on a daily basis is do what their pancreas wouldn't do I guess on its own. Right. So they are taking insulin to cover for the foods they eat, and they check their blood sugar on this monitor to see how they're doing. Yeah. And that's really, I mean, in a nutshell, that's diabetes. What is hard, the different confounders or different variables that come in with every day is these kids are growing up with changing hormones, which absolutely has an effect on your insulin levels and how your body responds to it. So that will change your insulin requirements. They're playing sports. They're active. When you're having activity, it's going to reduce your insulin levels or your response to insulin. So you may see a decrease in blood sugar. Say if kids are stressed for a test coming up, that could totally play. I remember when I took my SATs, I was stressed about it in high school and my blood sugar dropped in the middle of the test. And we can talk about signs of a low blood sugar versus a high blood sugar, because I think that's really important for you to know as a nanny and a caretaker what that sign looks like and how to prepare, because that's probably the most emergent situation you'll see. Yeah. But day in and day out, the kid is going to have a regimen from the pediatrician or from the endocrinologist on how much insulin to take for the carbohydrate count in the foods they eat. So most foods, well, not most foods, but a lot of the times you'll have a nutrition fact label and I'll have the total carbohydrate count. And all this will be laid out. This is not something you have to figure out on your own. Right. So you won't have to go and say, let me guess that if this has 24 grams, I should give him 6 units of insulin. The math should be done by the pediatrician, and the parents should be really well versed in how that math is applied to the child's insulin levels.
That is a really good reminder.
I don't want you to like.
This podcast is not like a medical.
Right. I don't want it. Because there's different variables in how much a kid needs, at what age.
And typically, the goal of this episode is just general education.
Yes.
So if you are nannying for a child with type 1 diabetes, also do other research. Also,
And talk with the parents.
Yeah.
Talk with your kid.
Yeah.
He or she is going to know what they need to do. Whether or not they do it is a different story, but they will know, because this is something that we do 4 to 6 times a day. Yeah. So typically with injections, there's a couple ways to get insulin. You can do it through injections or you can do it through pump therapy. So if you see one of your kids who has type 1 diabetes and they have like a beeper looking thing on their hanging off their shorts or their belt, or maybe they have this coin. I would Google insulin pumps. It's okay. Better to get a visual.
Pictures up.
It's good to know, because it does look, they look a little funny. They look like beepers. And I've had people confuse, you know, me wearing an insulin pump, and they're like, why is your cell phone there? And why is it from 95? Like, well, and then you just don't want to explain to it. It's like, oh, my cell phone plan's weird. And then you walk away.
I like beepers better.
I like beepers better. So whatever. But, so that your pump therapy is really popular with kids. So you may see that. And, if you come across an insulin pump, just making sure that it stays dry is good, that it's not cracked. Most insulin pumps are water resistant, but I would just be cautious with keeping it underwater if they're in the swimming pool, taking bath. And again, they should know what to do and the parents should know what to do. So whatever their rules that they've set in the house is something that I would go by. But just being aware that, hey, this is an insulin pump. It's giving my child medication 24/7, and we're going to change it every 3 days. And then maybe you can sit down and have the child teach you how to use it and kind of get them excited about diabetes. It's always my goal with kids. When I work with them, is to get them excited and empowered and encouraged by having diabetes and a chronic illness. If you make it cool, then they will want to show you how it works and do stuff with it. Or
Right. And then also
there's,
just
yeah.
them teaching you the
It's
ability
great.
for them to teach you about something that they know so well, or are still figuring out. Because one of the best ways to learn something is to teach other people. So providing them with that opportunity is invaluable.
And so that they'll open up to their friends about it. I've worked with kids who've been bullied at school. Well, you don't really want to, it's diabetes is, I call it purgatory because you're not sick enough to have this like illness that sends you into the hospital where you go into remission or you have some sort of chemo or radiation therapy and you may have a relapse later. It's not like that sick, but it's also you're sick enough to die in a week if you don't take care of it. It's this weird middle ground that's all on the inside of your body. You don't have any mark on the outside of your body, like a broken arm or you're missing an eyeball. There's nothing that says, okay, this is the disease state I have. So it's very difficult sometimes to explain how it makes you feel or what you have to do or why you have to do it when you're a 10-year-old talking to another 10-year-old who just cares about video games.
Yes,
So getting
until they
them
invent a video game.
they do. They have something called Jerry the Bear. You've got it. It's so
What?
cool. Jerry the Bear. Nannies, if you're out there, Jerry the Bear is so cool.
That sounds
Oh my
amazing.
God. Two engineers, I believe from MIT, it could be Harvard, but I think MIT,
Some
who came
really
up
good
with,
engineering school.
right, oh my God, yeah, just like super smart, and they wanted an interactive way to teach kids how to manage their diabetes. So I remember in the show I told you get a teddy bear when you're diagnosed to teach the teddy bear how to take insulin injections, or you practice on an
Yes.
orange. Now they have this super high tech bear called Jerry the Bear. Who has like a video game pouch on his stomach and it does like carb counting and pump therapy. It is so cool.
That's amazing. Okay, so two different routes back to that of either injections, and if you are doing injections, with a child, then it's a certain amount of units. Is that
Correct,
okay?
correct. It's a certain amount of units. It can come from a traditional vial, which holds 1,000 units in one vial, or it can come in a pen form, this disposable injection pen. It's called. There's three or four different companies that have insulin types. The main insulin types you'll see are Novolog, Humalog, Lantus, Levemir. And Tresiba. Those are the five that you'll see most often. So kids are giving insulin at meals and at night, normally at nighttime, right before they go to bed, because they'll need a basal. It's kind of complicated science, but they'll give a bolus or a short-acting insulin with meals and a long-term insulin that covers your basal rate all day long because your pancreas is normally giving you insulin 24/7, and then it gives you little spurts of insulin when you eat. And that's what a pump will do on the outside of your body with one type of insulin. And if you take injections, you need that long-term control and then short mealtime control. And it's important, just probably something you will see. You do once a vial or a pen device is in use, meaning you have punctured the top of it with a needle, either to draw insulin out or with a pen needle on top of the pen device. You do not have to refrigerate it. That is something you will encounter. Do I need to refrigerate this medication
I actually
when I take it
thought
places?
about that.
Yes. Okay, good.
Yeah, as
That's
you were talking, I was like, oh, I wonder if it has to be refrigerated.
Because you'll take they'll take this insulin everywhere they go. They'll be in a hot car with it, and you'll be worried about it. You want to make sure it works. And what you want to do is you do want to keep it at room temperature once it's in use. But if it's not in use, so prior to using it and puncturing it with a needle. I keep saying puncturing because I worked for a pharmaceutical company. We had to, this is how we had to explain it. It has a shelf life. Each insulin has a different shelf life and a different of a different use life. So Lantus has a use life of 28 days, meaning that once you puncture the top of that bottle or the top of that pen, you have 28 days to use the rest of the insulin before they recommend going to a new pen or going to a new vial. Whether or not you stick with that is, it's not realistic, but just prior to use, put it in the refrigerator, not in the freezer, but in the refrigerator. And once it's in use, I'll have one device, usually in use of a type of insulin, then keep it at room temperature. So when you're on, if you're going to the beach, if you're going to be outside on a hot day in the park, if you're going to be inside a car all day and it's going to be hot, then I would put it in a, in an ice box, in a lunch box that has, like a cooler in it or, just a little
ice pack.
Yeah. A little ice pack. That's what I would do. Just to make sure that it stays around room temperature, but it doesn't need to be stored in there.
Okay. That's so good to know.
It's interesting, and every insulin is different. And most of the time, you're not really looking. And honestly, even expired insulin works. It's just, it's through manufacturing label. Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, I wouldn't even go there. You don't need to know it, but that's kind of like the go-to. Refrigerate prior to use. Once in use, keep it at room temperature.
That's awesome. Okay. So we also kind of earmarked a few minutes ago low blood sugar versus high blood sugar and talking about the signs of those.
Yes. So low blood sugar, high blood sugar is called hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia. So low blood, high blood, or low sugar in the blood, high sugar in the blood.
Right.
So the signs of high blood sugar, hyperglycemia, are very much like the signs that you'll see prior to diagnosis. You'll see extreme thirst, urination, fatigue. They'll be taking, you know, unwarranted naps, and they'll have increased appetite. So it's just kind of like an acute or a short duration of what happens prior to diagnosis. That's hyperglycemia. And the way that you treat hyperglycemia is with more insulin. Mm-hmm. You have too much sugar in the blood, you need insulin to break it all down and to put it into different places. It doesn't technically break it down. That's a science faux pas. But to put it into different places, you need insulin for high blood sugar. And you'll see that often. Sometimes if a dose is miscalculated and you give too little insulin for a meal, maybe you'll have a high blood sugar 2 hours later. This sugars fluctuate all the time because we're eating and doing things differently all the time. Low blood sugar is the one that I want you to know. If you take away one thing, take away the diabetes, take away the refrigerating, and take away this, low blood sugar is serious. So the brain, how your brain gets energy and what it gets its food from is glucose.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have enough glucose in your body, that's where it all goes to. It shunts right up to the brain. So if you have low blood sugar, you're not feeding your brain. You're going to have some serious neurological deficits and complications. If left untreated, or if you have an incredible amount of hypoglycemic events over a long period of time. So it's more serious than I initially gave thought to when I was first diagnosed. And the more that I learn about it from the science perspective, low blood sugars are dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So what will happen is you'll feel dizzy and shaky. I'll look at my hand and I'll have this kind of fine tremor to it. I'll feel nauseous. I'll be sweating. The lowest my blood sugar has been. So if you think about it kind of on a scale, 80 to 120 is what we shoot for. 80 to 0 is all you can go to. 0 is the last number. You can go from 120 up into the thousands for hyperglycemia. So hypo, you have such a low threshold that below 50 is technically diagnosed. That's a hypoglycemic event. You may feel hypo at 70, but the actual diagnosis is below 50. And how you treat it, you need sugar. If it is a serious event, nannies, caretakers, whoever is paying attention, if it is a serious event, and they're not awake, if they're not conscious, if they're not talking back to you, if they can't open their eyes, then all families should have a glucagon shot on hand. And I think that as a caretaker, you should be trained to know how to use it. It's almost like the diabetes version of an EpiPen. Yeah. And glucagon is glucose. It's really concentrated sugar that goes IM or intramuscularly, mm-hmm. and you're going to give that into their thigh. That is in a very serious, dire situation. I've had diabetes for almost 15 years. I've never used it. My sister has never been in that situation. She's had it for almost 25 years. So it's rare that you,
but important.
But you might have to use it. You should have it. It's like an EpiPen, and that's kept in the refrigerator. It's just high-dose glucose that goes right into the muscle, and that will bring them out of that low blood sugar. If they're talking to you, they're going to know the symptoms. Well, there's also something called hypoglycemia unawareness, which actually some of the kids from the show have that. They can't tell when their blood sugar is low, so you can have diabetes dogs to help them figure out. That's for another episode. There's so many cool things you can do with diabetes. Yes. But if they're talking to you and they're saying, I'm low, I feel tremors, and you check the blood sugar with them, I would talk to a pediatrician, talk to your parents. Right. But for me, if it's below 80, if it's in the 70s or below, then giving them around 15 to 20 grams of carbohydrates. So good things to have on hand in the house, or good things to have in your purse, your backpack, your pocket, whatever, when you're walking, or a diaper bag. Yes. Have these on hand. Have juice boxes. It doesn't have to stay cool. Juice boxes will usually have 15 to 20 grams of carbohydrates for each of those juice boxes, or gummy packs. I treat lows with gummies, and I'm people who are around me will see me just chomping on gummies. That's usually because I'm preventing a low or I feel it coming on. Gummies are good to have. They say textbooks will tell you 8 ounces of orange juice or a soda with sugar, not a diet soda, but like real Coke, Sprite, any sort of form of sugar needs to get into that kid's body. So if you want to make sure they eat it and ingest it, that's called a PO route. Oral route is the best. If they're talking to you, if they have not gone unconscious. And that's more the lows that you're going to see. And you will definitely see that. As a caretaker of a type 1, you will see that. I have lows frequently, which I'm working on. But that's having those on hand at all time. And if you if you're taking care of older kids, 16-year-old kids who are driving, make sure that they have those in the car. Or say that you're taking care of the younger kids in the family or in the household, and they have an older brother with type 1. Make sure they have glucose tablet. Glucose tablets are another good one. You can get those at Walgreens. About 4 of those, I believe, will equal to 15 to 20 grams. But the rule that they say is that you should do 15 to 20 grams when you feel a hypo or you've tested your blood sugar and it's, for me, less than 80 or less than 50 from textbook. Then you ingest or eat the 20 grams and then you wait 15 minutes. So it's like 15, wait 15, check it again. If it hasn't come up, do another 15 grams, wait 15 minutes. If it hasn't come up, you repeat it until it comes up, because sometimes it just takes a long time to come up. But that is something you'll see. Have those things on hand, have more than you need on hand. Yes. And the kids should feel it. If you see them shaking, that's a sign. Or if you see them acting weird, because remember, that's the glucose goes to the brain. If the brain's not getting the food it needs, they're going to start acting weird. It's called altered mental status, AMS. And they may have a slurred speech. They may be fussy. They may be agitated. They may try to fight you. they need sugar, and usually I get really hungry. I get ravenously hungry because my body is saying I need food. So I keep those on hand. That actually, and it's really important. I can't even stress the importance of that.
Yeah, and that's really, really great advice. 'Cause as nannies, we almost always keep some sort of food, and for, specific kids, different specific foods to meet their needs. But yes, having more than you think you'll need, and checking that literally every time before you leave, is just as important as an EpiPen for allergy kids or, anything that you need,
And helping the
for your
family
kid.
too, say the family doesn't have a glucagon injection, be like, hey, I listened to this really awesome podcast and I've heard that maybe we need a glucagon injection just in case, worst comes to worst. And maybe that's something that you can put on your resume that you know how to do is inject a glucagon injection, which is really like if you can help save a kid's life. I mean, I think that's a real, it's similar to an EpiPen. So if you know how to use an EpiPen, you'll know how to use this. But,
But it's still really important to get trained on everything individually. And yeah, if you haven't been trained on it and you work in a household with a child with type one, then asking, saying, hey, if do you have a glucagon? And if you don't, then can we get one? And if you do, can I personally be trained on it?
Absolutely.
Which, I mean, a theme throughout this entire podcast is communication with parents, with
Oh,
kids. All of
and if
it is about communication.
and parents of type ones are hyper vigilant.
Yeah,
They are the
they
most
have to
hyper vigilant
be.
individuals you'll meet. They are some of the most special parents, I think. I have a heart for it because my parents are parents of type ones, obviously. But like working with JDRF, and just talking to their experience, it's hard for them to let go because they, especially if they grow up with, if the kid is diagnosed really young, let's say before, if you're 9, if you're 10, you may be able to start doing your own injections. You may be able to start checking your own blood sugars and being fine. But if you're 4 or 5 years old at diagnosis, the parents are giving the injections. The parents are changing the insulin pumps. The parents are checking their blood sugars. I know parents who have continued to wake up in the middle of the night and take their child's finger and check it to make sure that it is okay in the middle of the night and the child's in high school. So these parents are going to be hyper vigilant because they are their child's lifeline. The child has to learn the habits from the parents. And we should do a podcast sometime about parents trusting kids with diabetes, because it's really that's another social aspect of diabetes that is really hard and much harder unless I guess you have a kid that has it. But so if they're trusting you with their kid with diabetes, that means A, they trust you a lot, which is good, and they will tell you everything that they want you to know. They're gonna have a list, they're gonna have printouts, they're gonna have apps on their phone with carbohydrate counters, which is another good thing to have on your phone. There's Calorie King. There's one other two that are good for counting carbs. But talk with your parents. They will want to talk to you about it. They will be excited that you care.
And with that, let's transition into the emotional health of the child, and how you, as a caregiver and a nanny, can help them. I love the idea about having the child teach you if they're of a speaking age.
Absolutely.
Having them show you how to do everything and just really like leaning into the student role in that of like, even if you've listened to this podcast and you feel super informed, not correcting the child, and unless they have something wrong that would be dangerous.
If
But
you see,
letting them lead.
or and getting them excited, like, wow, like checking your blood sugar, even have them check your blood sugar. I checked all of our cast blood sugar to let them know what it feels like. I feel like it took a lot for yours, right? Did we
It
check
did.
yours?
We did, and it
We
was.
did.
But yeah, I was like, I don't like needles.
Right. It's so even just like, man, if you're a nanny out there or caretaker and you are scared of needles, like
Hey, now's the time to conquer that fear. And maybe once you change the needle out so that you're not sharing needles,
Right.
you can check your blood sugar with the child. I would say that's completely fine. It
Yeah,
may.
and telling the child, like, this really scares me, and I can only imagine,
Oh,
how it
yeah.
feels for you.
Oh, totally. That kind of strength, giving, being empathetic, but also just like saying, man, it's not only like I think you're special because I have to say you're special, but I think you're
Right.
special, like, because you really do have to conquer one of my greatest fears 4 to 6 times a day.
Right.
And that will just inevitably empower the kid to the goal, I think, is to get them to like diabetes. Because if you don't like it at the beginning, then it's going to be really hard to like it. So it just keeps going on. But
Right.
I think that's good, empowering them. And you were talking about that's such a great thing to play the student role. Get them to teach you how to count carbs. Get them to teach you everything. How to give injections. Maybe you can give injections to an orange, or maybe you can help out with changing a pump because they may know how to do it. Even just getting them to talk to you about it will be good. And they may be very resistant. There's a lot of emotional. I can bring up a few examples. This is like, do we have time for that? Is
Yeah.
that good?
I mean,
Okay.
do you have time? That's the issue.
Oh my God. Yeah, Martha, yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, I totally. So I keep thinking of like high school. I'll try to think of an elementary school or a middle school example, but high school. So remember from the diagnosis stage, you may see weight loss with hyperglycemia or high blood sugars. There will be girls, and I've worked with girls. I haven't worked with boys yet, though, where I found this, but it would be the same for both genders. Will purposely not give insulin or have chronically high blood sugars to keep weight off because insulin is a growth hormone. It can make you gain weight, and weight in high school is a big issue. So it's almost like some kids who smoke to stay thin, or maybe that's an adult thing, but that happens with hyperglycemia. They'll lose weight and keep it off and stay thin, but the complications later on are not worth it. Or maybe I've worked with a kid who would go to school every day, and a bully would come up and pull his insulin pump off of his body. His
Oh
insulin pump
my
had
gosh.
wires, and he'd go every day. So he ended up being homeschooled. This is a fourth grader. It's like kind of that, like, I don't even know how. Well, A, to describe the wrath I feel whenever I even think about that story, but it's like he feels disabled from it, and these kids with type 1 diabetes are not disabled at
No.
all. They're capable of doing everything that a kid without type 1 diabetes can do. They just have to, now I don't even want to say work harder, they just have to
Do it differently.
do it differently, and they're better for it. A, they're smarter at math for it because you're constantly doing mental math, but these kids are braver, more courageous, for doing those same things despite their constant battle with blood glucose without insulin. But I think things that you'll encounter as a nanny is maybe like the idea of a cure, will it go away? So things that you can say to them if they ever ask you, there's research all going on all the time at many different sites around the world that are working on a cure for type 1 diabetes. So and we can go into the science about that later, but there are viable options. So I would not be surprised if diabetes is cured sooner than we think. So that's something that you can say to them, maybe not saying that yes, there's a cure right now and you can get it, but giving them a little bit of hope is a good thing, is a good conversation starter. But these kids might be sad. They might not want to talk to you about it. They may have a day full of bad blood sugars, and no matter how much insulin they give or how many right things they do with counting carbohydrates, they may never get it right. I've had so many days. I've had so many days. One example, today this happened. I've been trying to like drink more water and less coffee. And so I drank a lot more water than usual. And you end up going to the bathroom a lot more. And then I check my blood sugar and it's 450. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I've had, I thought I was going to the bathroom because I was doing something good when really it's a high blood sugar. And it's discouraging. So maybe if you get out their logs, they'll probably most likely have a log with them where they're writing down their blood sugars. Or if you go through their sometimes kids will have something called a continuous glucose monitoring system. There is so much that goes into diabetes and so much different technology. You can go through and look at their good blood sugars. This is what an endocrinologist out in California who has type 1 diabetes, this is what he does with his kids who come in to see him. He'll go through their logs and circle the good blood sugars and say, what did you do on this day? And how can we make that day happen every day? And that's something that you can easily do as a nanny or caretaker for your kids. So that endo, I'm gonna end up doing a rotation with, and I'm really, really excited.
That's great.
He's oh my God, the way that he treats is so like uplifting from a chronic illness standpoint because he really like he has bad blood sugars all the time, so it's, it just makes it so much more realistic.
Yeah, and to also like, yeah, focus on what kids are doing right is
Oh,
just so
yeah. Oh,
important
is
in
that
every
is that.
aspect.
Okay, I was gonna ask if that's kind of consistent with what you believe and do.
Yes.
Okay, yeah,
Yes,
it's
completely.
especially when it's every day. If you always go to the bad blood sugars, my mom and my sister have had so many blowouts over that, especially when she was in middle school, high school.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And just, yeah, really thinking through the empathy of that, of, 'cause imagine, like, we all try to eat well, but imagine, like, making a quote unquote mistake in a food choice,
Oh,
really
yeah.
having serious consequences. That's a really, really hard thing of like, I don't ever get to like let my guard down really about this.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, it's constant and that's when kids get depressed. And I don't want to be super sad, but
No, I don't mind getting into some of the sad parts. Yeah.
there is suicide with there's
Yeah.
depression and suicide with kids with diabetes, and they this is not something I want you as caretakers or nannies to think too much or hone too much into, but they have a device that can totally kill them if they wanted to. Too much insulin, boom. And that's happened before. There's been documented cases, so
Yeah.
it's much more. That's why I don't like type 1 diabetes being thrown into the diabetes bucket because it's 5% of this diabetes population that has a completely different manifestation and prognosis. So it's just if encouraging them, lifting them up, they're going to be their endocrinologists, maybe their parents are going to be on them about bad blood sugars because part of taking care of a kid with a chronic illness is tough love. You don't want them to chronically have bad blood sugars, and I don't even want to say bad, high blood sugars or
Right.
low blood sugars, and then they have complications 20 years later where they're like, where was my parenting? Where was the parental control in this? So you don't want too much of a laxity. You want to be proactive about blood sugars that are outside of the normal range, because there are serious consequences that can happen with running blood sugars out of 80 to 120 for a long time. So you want to be
Yeah.
proactive, but you want to be encouraging and uplifting so that they want to be proactive about it. And if you do
And
that
being
as a
their
job,
team, like thinking
yeah.
about it as like we are all a team here to helping keep all of us like healthy. And
Yes.
so this is part of our team's way of keeping you healthy. Instead of focusing on like we have to like you are the one that we need to pay the most attention to. It's like no, we all are
Totally.
watching all aspects of our health, and this is an aspect of your health that needs extra attention, maybe.
And you can, I've known, well, really, when my sister was diagnosed, we changed a lot of the things that we had in our refrigerator, and we had sodas. Sodas aren't great, by the way, but
yeah,
like I think changing, we all like
that, but yes,
we have sodas. Like it's life. Like whenever, maybe if your special thing with the kid you're taking care of loves Diet Coke, maybe you don't drink regular Coke in front of them. Maybe you share a Diet Coke with them. That's a small gesture to know that, like what they're doing is cool, and the change, the dietary changes they've had to make. Quick side note on dietary changes, because I don't think I mentioned that, like, the kids with diabetes can't eat sugar myth. That is a myth. Or if you're seeing your kids and you're taking them out and they have type 1 diabetes and you're concerned about what they're eating, they go through coaching with a nutritionist. The rule of thumb used to be that we want to really stay low carb, and stay away from like refined sugars, stuff that can spike their blood sugars really easily or spike later. Like pizza tends to have a later spike. 3 to 4 hours after eating it, you may notice a high blood sugar. But now the kind of what they want with this whole empathetic way of treating diabetes is to have kids be like other kids. And so typically you can eat what you want as long as you cover for it. And that's going to be a pediatrician parent question to ask, but don't be scared or don't be nervous or don't tell your kid you can't eat that, because that will make a lasting impact.
Right.
For sure. You can't eat that means that what I'm doing is bad and everybody else gets to do it.
Right.
And that kind of that will stick with them. Just talking to the parents and saying, hey, I want to know typically what he or she, Timmy or Jill, I don't know what those names were, but whether or not like what they're eating is what you want and if they're covering correctly for it. That's another sugar myth that has to be dispelled.
Yeah, no, that's a great note, because I feel like that's so like in our pop culture about diabetes is like no sugar. And so
right, and it's impossible. Everything, it's not even like you count carbohydrates. So a salad will have carbohydrates. Good things, an apple has tons of carbohydrates. Fruits, it's vegetables, like you have to count for that. So but anyways, that's a side note, but you're right.
And also like pointing out that a healthy diet is a healthy diet is a healthy diet, you know, like
absolutely
not like you can't eat that, like maybe we shouldn't have that because you've already had these other sugars today. Or
100% on everybody has to do this level, not you have to do this because you have this chronic illness, because then it makes it feel like it's their fault for having diabetes.
Yeah.
It's like the blame game. Parents will go through that too. It's my fault. My kid has type 1 diabetes, and it's not true.
Right. But and keeping that in mind with parents too, especially if you happen to be in the household when a child is being diagnosed, of being there as much as you can for the parents as well.
Yes.
Because that is, it's a hard transition for an entire family.
Absolutely. It's your world is just flipped upside down, especially if you've never seen diabetes, you don't, that maybe there's nobody else in the school who has diabetes. Know that you'll probably have in Tennessee, it's a 504 plan at the school. Making sure as a caretaker to know like that there's some sort of plan of action for how diabetes is going to be treated once the child goes to school is a good conversation to have with the administration, with the school nurse, and with the parents.
That's really good to think about.
That will be because diabetes is pretty, it's prevalent. Most schools have at least one kid with type 1 diabetes, so there'll be something in place. But knowing that they have a right to leave and go to the bathroom, a right to check their blood sugar, a right to go to the nurse and get their insulin and take time out of class for that is important for them. And my sister and I would totally abuse that. Go hang out in the nursing office and have Diet Cokes and
peanut butter crackers, and like you just have to have, I don't know, you just have to break the rules. There's even stuff at theme parks. Theme parks have special things for kids with type 1 diabetes where you can like skip the line. Like look up those things and take advantage of it so that they feel special.
Yeah.
I've done that at Six Flags. Yeah, I've gone through the exit and you just, you have a pass. You got it. You could take advantage. If you have to give shots up many times a day, take advantage. Use it.
That's a really good point. And then, yeah, I mean, we have an episode about bullying, not specifically about bullying for this, but that would be a good episode to listen to in conjunction with this. But also keep in mind that bullying might be going on. Any kid in a school system that is quote unquote different in any way, shape, or form is a potential target for bullying. So yeah, really allowing, holding space for your child to come talk to you. And in that episode, we talk about how a lot of times children are more likely to talk to a nanny about it than a parent. So, you know, asking every day, you know, how did your day go? Or there's a list of 50 other questions that you can ask of like, who did you play with? And it doesn't have to be about their blood sugar levels, you know, like just really checking in with the kid every day about how school is going is super
absolutely
important.
Oh, absolutely. So that diabetes becomes just another normal thing that you do. It's not the thing.
Yeah.
That's great. Martha, that was good. That was good advice.
You.
I love
thank
it. You must like know what you're talking about.
Some days. I'm trying to learn more every day. But yeah, and so my biggest takeaways, and I would love for you to add to this list anything that you think, Andy.
Sure.
But checking your diaper bag, your backpack, your car, whatever, when you leave the house for having extra sugary treats, gummies. I love that idea about gummies, although don't get the sugar-free kind. One, because they don't have sugar, and two, because I hear that they ravage
right.
your intestinal system.
Right. Just some Welch's. Let's just plug for them right now.
Yeah, let's do. Or juice boxes. Or
juice
anything.
Boxes are great. Yeah.
But in taking probably twice as many as you, you know, or three times? What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As many as, not as many as you can fit. Just enough, three or four, because you'll keep them in there. Gummies probably don't, you know, perish easily. So you can just always have something in there. Glucose tablets have a big pack of like 100 tabs. That's kind of looks like a, not like the small, it's not a small bottle, it's a big bottle. And those are easy to throw into a diaper bag as well. And you can always have those on. So you won't have to keep refilling.
Talk to your kids, all of them, everyone in the family, really, about
yes.
how they're feeling, and be just an open door for them to talk, and know that they might not want to, and that's okay. And you can also listen to our episode that was literally last week about play as the language of a kid. How often they will tell you things in play that they can't communicate straightforward with words. So being aware of how they're playing, especially if you're taking care of a really young kid with type 1, that's really important, because they might not have the vocabulary yet to tell you, man, I really feel frustrated.
Oh, right. right.
Yeah. So just holding space for them and allowing them to talk to you when they're ready, and being constantly able to listen, which we all try to practice every day as nannies. And some days are better than others. And also never punishing a child for their blood sugar. Because
yes,
it's not their fault.
Oh my, yes, it's not. It's really not.
Just saying, how can we solve this problem?
Absolutely.
Yeah, working towards a solution
and fixing the problem. If they have a bad blood sugar, we gotta give insulin. Yeah. Or not bad, just high blood sugar. High blood sugar, low blood sugar. Yep. Treat the problem.
Yep, exactly.
I get them all the time. I've had it for 15 years. It's something that you will not get perfect. Even with me, I think about diabetes all the time, and it's part of my profession, and I still don't get it right. So, yeah. So kids will inevitably...
Of you as a person.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, and neither will it be a reflection of the child with type 1.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, any other huge, big takeaways that you think we should re-highlight right here at the end?
No, that's good. That's good. Yeah, just be kind, be patient, and just love the heck out of the kid. Like, yeah. They're going to need it. If it's around the diagnosis, they're really going to need it. You always need positive reinforcements. It's a chronic illness. It's never going away as of now. So just checking in. Just checking in and being there for them.
Also, look for Walk for the Cure.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Go with your kids. Let your kids see you there supporting them.
There are camps there. I mean, if you want to Google Jerry the Bear as a present for kids, if you want to Google campschildrenwithdiabetes.com is another good website. JDRF. JDRF.org is it's a national nonprofit that's juvenile, that's basically focused for type 1 and fundraises for research. Children with Diabetes is just, it's an awesome website. There's a Disney World trip they do every year. There's forums, there's online forums and blogs they have. There's a lot of online social media presence with type 1 diabetes. So just getting involved with that is going to be really, really great for the kid and for you and your relationship with them.
Is there anything that you want to plug personally?
Oh, no. I guess Andy and the Beads. I don't have a website. I'm so bad with this. I continue to work on the show, and I've written a children's book version of it that an artist friend of mine from South Carolina has put together wonderful illustrations for. So in the future, you can Google Andy and the Beats. There's videos on YouTube if you want to see some of the scene work. Martha is in it. Andy and the Beats, check it out. I will continue to work on this until the day I die. So hopefully you'll see it. It's a fun show. And Martha was fantastic. She was the first mama.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I will also be putting up pictures throughout this week on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. So check all of those out. Chronicles of Nania will get you there every time. You can also visit chroniclesofnania.com for more information. I will probably link to some of the websites that Andy referenced so that you can get there. On chroniclesofnania.com. So we end every episode with a funny, uplifting, moving story. And Andy has brought one, a personal one, which I love.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, this is my favorite kind of tearjerker story with diabetes. It was when my sister was first diagnosed. She was 9, I was 7, and we were going to our first Walk to Cure Diabetes by Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. It was in Knoxville's World's Fair Park, and we did this big walk, and it was so beautiful, and she was so uplifted because she was surrounded by friends, or new friends, and other kids that had type 1 diabetes, and she didn't know anybody. So it was a big, like, wonderful, like, just, like, happy day. And so we finished the walk as a family, and literally as we cross the finish line, she just starts jumping up and down with joy. She's grinning from ear to ear. She's tugs at my mom's shirt, and she's like, "We did it, we did it." Mom's like, "Yeah, we finished the walk." And she's like, "No, I'm cured." And she thought that Walk to Cure Diabetes literally meant that you got a cure at the end of the walk. And my mom, like, said that's the worst moment of her life, was when she had to explain to her that diabetes is a lifelong disease. It's never going away. And that's the conversation that hopefully in my profession and in my career that parents or caretakers won't have to have with their kids.
Right.
But those walks are really great events to go to, that if you want to be uplifted and see a bunch of kids just be empowered by something that usually would bring down anybody else, it's worthwhile for sure.
Yes, I had a blast at the one that I walked with you when you were
Yes.
doing the musical.
Won't you walk with us? That's my
Yes, I love it.
tagline.
But yeah, it's really it's a great experience. And then also just, there's a lot to donate to right now. There's a lot of people in need, but consider JDRF because it's a great
Yes.
cause.
And really, over 85% of what they bring in goes straight to research. So not just even like education, it's research for a cure. They're really, really good about advances in technology and advances towards ending it, which is it's they're a really great company.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that personal
Oh, anytime for
plug.
you, Martha.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Well, gosh, Andy, thank you, thank you, thank you. This
Oh
was
my God,
wonderful.
thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm honored. It's a privilege to talk to you. And this is my biggest passion in life. So I'm just happy to share stories and happy to share with your audiences too. If you're listening to this, you're doing a great thing because you're helping kids. And if everybody else could help kids, we would have a better world.
It's so true.
So true.
And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week. Chronicles of Nania is produced and hosted by Martha Reddick. Artwork by Noni Amadon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.